This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, and welcome to it. It's Thursday here on the program. And I saw this and this in the news today. And I wanted to share this with you. This comes from Fox 17 out of Grand Rapids. But the Battle Creek City Commission has said yes to joining the Welcoming City program, which welcomes refugees and immigrants. The decision came about after 3 months in the commission discussing it. But Battle Creek is going to accept a lot more refugees, apparently, making it an inclusive community. It's clip 5. Go.
This is not an immigrant attraction program. The city is not getting involved in any national immigration policy or doing anything to specifically attract new residents. This is really about how are we a welcoming place for the folks, all of our residents that are currently living here.
I'm not sure if that makes sense. Congressman Tim Walberg joining me, and I thought I would get the congressman to comment on this. He's here every week. First of all, Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you.
And you know, and I think it's good for Michigan communities to welcome people, but I think it's hard for the young lady to say, well, it's not part of any immigration program. It's really not political. Come on. Of course it's political. All of these things, sanctuary cities and immigration policies, to me, they come off as actually perfectly political. Do you think I'm wrong about that?
No, I think it's very easy, especially in the time in which we live and the impact that we've had from people who've come in to our country from overseas relative to ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the war on terror. It's a different time and a different place that we must be concerned about. So, no, I want us to be an open nation to people who want to be Americans and experience American dream. But that comes with some very clear protections and restrictions that make sure that those are the type of people that are coming. So I am concerned about the two sides right now, and that's why we have to, before we do any advancement of this, we've got to get a clear and safe, vetted immigration policy.
But we don't have that. We don't have at all. You know, and this president doesn't seem particularly interested in changing what we're doing. The chaos and the confusion seem to be working for him just fine.
Just fine. Well, remember Saul Alinsky taught him well. Keep us in crisis, and you can get things done. And that's the challenge, and we have to think clear-headed about it, saying, yes, there are great people that could add a lot to this country, just like many of our forefathers that added to this country. But let's do it with clear-headed thinking, and let's make sure that we've secured ourselves before we simply say, have at it. And that's the challenge now of people, especially when they're willing to violate the law, like sanctuary cities, no retribution that comes for violating the law. That doesn't bode well for freedom, liberty, and opportunity in American society.
I want to talk to you about something we were talking about earlier here on the program, and that is a conversation started by Donald Trump, and not surprisingly this year, a conversation that started by Donald Trump, but has created a conversation that is about America's role in the world when it comes to NATO, and more specifically, our role in the world when it comes to nuclear weapons. Trump suggesting here recently that maybe Japan and South Korea should, you know, provide their own weapons because we can't afford to, you know, continue to pay for it and be the world's nuclear police officer, if you will. What do you make of comments like that? Is it time to reassess our position in NATO? Is it time to reassess how much money we spend defending prosperous, popular nations, if you will?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I would certainly agree with, his general statement there. I think NATO can be a very positive thing for us, but I think we ought to expect all of our NATO partners to contribute what they're expected to contribute and not expect America to take up the slack. You know, I was in Estonia last year a little country sits right on the Russian border. They know that Russia could and Putin could roll right over them. But they've committed themselves to NATO, and they're paying their share of what they're doing, knowing that if they are going to expect the protections of the rest of us, they ought to be willing to contribute, even though they know it's it's perfunctory, and it just establishes a statement. But I think the rest of the countries that are involved with it ought to be in the same case. And I think that may be the main point that I would certainly agree with the message that Donald Trump is getting out.
No, we pay for everything. I mean, I think that's the point that we all agree with. Listen, we pay for everything, for NATO, for the United Nations, for all sorts of protectorates around the world that we look out for, and we foot the bill. You know, listen, we're broke, and we need to have, you know, these other countries that are populous and prosperous need to jump up and cover some of this money.
Absolutely, and that's the message that ought to go out clear from this country and its administration. I think that's what he's referring to. But again, I think there's great value in being in relationship, especially with NATO, UN. I think that's a different story. But NATO, certainly, for our defensive capabilities, for having allies that we can use if necessary, and more importantly, that can hopefully put a large shadow over the bad actors that are out there. But again, we all have to pay our share of the process if we expect to have help.
Yeah, and the other thing that I wanted to touch base on, big in the headlines this week, is the battle over North Carolina's public facilities privacy laws and their Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act, HB2. And now all of these folks are saying, well, we can't go to North Carolina. They're canceling concert trips and, you know, other governors saying you can't travel to North Carolina or Mississippi for different reasons. What do you make of this?
Well, it's again, the radical left attempting to do major change agency in our country, affecting the majority with minority. Frankly, that's what we have a constitution for, to make sure that majority does rule with the general opinion. However, minority are protected with their civil liberties. This is an issue where a state has taken a stand, and let me say it this way, right, wrong, or indifferent, that's where the majority of these stands ought to be made, and that's in individual states. When you see the type of actions that other state governors and then people like Bruce Springsteen and others are trying to make, when in fact they've gone and had concerts in many other states that have less of protections, allegedly, than what North Carolina has put in place, I think you have really an opportunity for chaos and the minority, the small minority, overruling the wishes of the majority.
Or you have companies like PayPal that say they're not going to do business with some of these states and so forth, and yet they do business with countries where if you're gay, for example, they just kill you. So, you know, there might be a double standard there. There might be a double standard just for the sake of argument. Congressman, I know you got to run today. I appreciate you stopping in. It's always a good conversation.
Good to be with you. Have a great day.
There it is. Congressman Tim Walberg, everybody. And, And in fact, I'm gonna have an open letter to Bruce Springsteen and his band as written on thestream.org. I found this a couple of days ago. I want to share this with you because I find it interesting. And, well, I guarantee you, you're not going to hear it anywhere else except on The Steve Gerber Show.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
It is 18 after on this Thursday. And these bathroom bills are getting a lot of publicity around the country, none so much as North Carolina, where the law has been signed by the governor there. And so I found on the stream, online, thestream.org, Michael Brown wrote an open letter to Bruce Springsteen and his band. I'd like to read it to you because I think there's a conversation in here that you won't hear elsewhere, and I think it's an important conversation to have. Dear Bruce, as a resident of North Carolina since 2003, I read with great interest that you decided to cancel your April 10th concert in Greensboro because of HB2, the Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act. In your statement, you explained that, in your view, The bill is an attempt by people who cannot stand the progress our country has made in recognizing the human rights of all of our citizens to overturn that progress. You added that it was time for you and your band to show solidarity for those freedom fighters, speaking of transgender activists, and you ended your statement with these powerful words: "Some things are more important than a rock show, and this fight against prejudice and bigotry, which is happening as I write, is one of them. It is the strongest means I have for raising my voice in opposition to those who continue to push us backwards instead of forwards." I also read that your guitarist, Stephen Van Zandt, has likened HB2 to an evil virus that is spreading through the United States in the form of similar legislation. These are strong words, and they represent strong convictions. So let me be first to commend you and your band members for putting your principles before your livelihood, even to the disappointment of your North Carolina fans. I have read that you regretted not performing at the 1985 Live Aid concert at Wembley, and perhaps this is your way of saying, "I do care, and I'm here to make a difference." Whatever your motivation, I admire anyone who puts morality before money. My question to you and your band is simply this: in boycotting North Carolina and siding against HB2, did you really side with morality? Are you truly standing with freedom fighters? I'm assuming you read HB2 for yourself, and you're not just listening to media reports, attacking the bill, or worse still, getting your talking points from biased lobbyist groups like the Human Rights Campaign. If you're not really familiar with the bill, then click here to find out more. So please allow me to ask some questions. First, how do you know if someone is really transgender or not? Is it determined entirely by how they feel about themselves? If so, do you think that it might be hard to make laws based entirely on how people feel? Did you ever stop to consider that? Second, what's the difference between someone with gender dysphoria, or as it used to be called, gender identity disorder, and someone, say, with schizophrenia or multiple personality disorder or some other psychological condition? In other words, if a man is a biological and chromosomal male but believes he is a woman, is he actually a woman, or does he have a psychological condition or disorder? If he does have a psychological disorder, should we try to treat that disorder, or should we celebrate that disorder? And is it right to call biological males who feel they are women and biological women who feel they are men freedom fighters? Perhaps that's not the best use of the term. If you're deeply offended that I would dare suggest that many transgender individuals are dealing with a psychological disorder, could you kindly point me to the definitive scientific literature that explains that these biological males are actually females and these biological females are actually males? I'm not saying they don't deserve compassion. To the contrary, I'm saying that's exactly what they deserve: compassion, not celebration. But perhaps I'm being too abstract here, so let's get really practical. Let's say that a 6'4" man who used to play professional football and who has secretly agonized over his gender identity for years finally determines he must be true to himself and live as a woman. Do you think it might be traumatic for a little girl using the library bathroom to see this big man walk into her room wearing a dress and a wig? Should we take her feelings into account, or is she not important? What if that was your granddaughter? Would you care if she was traumatized? And when you speak of the human rights of all of our citizens, does that include little girls like this? Now, I understand that this gentleman will have difficulties should he decide to dress and live as a woman, but that is still a choice he is making, and it is not a fair comparison to impose his struggles on innocent little children, is it? And what if the same man, whom we'll assume is not a sexual predator, wants to share the YMCA locker room with your wife and your daughter, standing there in his underwear as they come out of the shower stalls wrapped in towels? Is this fair to them? Let's take this one step further. If any man who claims to be a woman can use women's bathrooms and locker rooms, then how do we keep the sexual predators out? I've asked people to watch a short video giving examples of male heterosexual predators who donned women's clothing to get into the ladies' rooms, and I'd encourage everyone to watch it as well. Without HB2, rapists and voyeurs and pedophiles would have free access to our women and daughters in the safety of their own bathrooms and their own locker rooms. Since you don't like HB2, indeed your guitarist called it an evil virus, what's your plan to keep the predators out? How can we tell the difference between a genuine transgender person and a sexual predator? Since everyone knows you as the boss, what would you do to keep the ladies and children safe? And one final question. When you booked the concert in Greensboro, the laws in North Carolina were just as they are today. In public facilities, people had to use the bathroom and locker rooms that corresponded to their biological sex. Why, then, did you agree to come in the first place? Why cancel the concert when things today are just what they were 6 months ago? Again, I appreciate your sincerity, but I question your judgment. In your zeal to do what is right, you have actually done what is exactly wrong. An open letter from Michael Brown to Bruce Springsteen, posing real questions, serious questions, sober questions about what directions we're going as a country when it comes to the lines between the sexes, the blurred lines of gender and responsibility and morality, I might say. Thursday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, welcome back to it. We've been warning you about this for some time that the insurance companies were not going to be able to cover their losses under Obamacare. Yeah, we've been hearing that premiums are going through the roof, which they are, 20, 30, 40%, some higher in some cases. Some folks like myself have lost insurance more than once. I've lost mine twice because of changes since Obamacare, things we were told would never happen. And now United Healthcare, which has been warning for a long time they were going to have serious problems, is now backed out of at least two states, Arkansas and Georgia. And I think that it's likely they'll back out altogether soon. Robert King is here, healthcare correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, this has been predicted. It's been on the horizon for some time, but now United Healthcare making some active moves. I mean, Georgia is a big market, Arkansas a medium market, but these are significant changes for United Healthcare, yes?
Oh, yes. It's definitely a big deal, especially since United Healthcare initially threatened, I think a little while ago, that they were going to pull out of the market, Obamacare markets altogether, because they posted about $400 million in losses in the Obamacare individual markets. And it's important to note that it's not just United Healthcare that has been having issues with profits in the Obamacare space. It's also been Anthem and Aetna and Cigna that have been having issues turning a profit in the Obamacare exchanges as well.
So, okay. I mean, we know that this is financially not viable. I mean, it's not like it took, you know, several decades like Social Security to find that it was viability was in question. The viability of Obamacare is in deep peril. And what are we, 6 years into it now? Not very long. We have more people uninsured today than at the beginning of the process, from what I read. Is there anything in Obamacare we can point to say this part worked?
Well, it's kind of, I mean, there have been big expansions of the uninsured population. It's been covered about 20 million people, but about a little more than half of that has been through the expansion of Medicaid, which has taken place in about 30 states and the District of Columbia. So when they talk about a lot of the coverage expansions and everything that you see, about a little more than half of that is through the Medicaid expansion, and the rest is through the business on the exchanges. And Obamacare, some of the proponents and everything of the law will point to certain things like the coverage of pre-existing conditions through insurance coverage, the requirements to cover birth control as a preventive health care measure. That's what some of the proponents will kind of point to as well. And they'll say that overall the law is working with the expansion of coverage to 20 million people. But again, you have to factor in the fact that there is this growing concern amongst insurance companies around profitability of the Obamacare exchanges. And if they pull out of the exchanges, then that could have some serious ramifications for those markets.
Well, okay, let's continue back down that road again. United Healthcare has pulled out of Georgia and Arkansas. They are the nation's largest insurer. Other companies like Cigna are losing money. It's well known. It's well documented. They say they remain committed to the process, but I find that awfully hard to believe. I'm going to guess that Cigna is also considering their options on how to exit. Let's say, for the sake of argument, United Healthcare leaves, Cigna leaves, other companies follow suit. What does that leave behind?
Well, that would mean essentially that the Obamacare marketplaces would crumble because there's no insurers to offer enough plans to people. I mean, they need the insurers to create the Obamacare marketplace because, I mean, those are the ones that actually offer the insurance to the people that sign up. So if a lot of the big guns leave, another one is Anthem, another one's to look at. But some of the other insurers are trying to kind of stick with Obamacare, hoping that the markets will the insurance market will kind of stabilize, because it's important to note that nobody really knew who was going to sign up for these Obamacare markets when they first were created back in 2014, so which is only about 2 years ago. So they're going to probably stick around because they think that they can with the hope that maybe the markets will stabilize and maybe that they'll eventually become profitable. But it is an interesting note to see kind of how long that's going to happen and how long they'll be willing to stick it out.
Yeah, and then the question becomes to me, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you explain how it's going to work, you know, structurally, but I wonder how it's going to work for, you know, my family. You know, we've lost it twice, insurance, and every time we got it back, it was different, and in some cases more expensive, in some cases not, but it was different, and so it's always confusing, and of course, you go to see your regular doctor, and you have to change it. It's a hassle. It's inconvenient, but at some point, if these insurance companies say, you know, they're going to get out, well, then the cost is going to have to go through the roof, isn't it? I mean, at some point, aren't we just going to get drilled?
Well, and that's another problem that you're talking about, which would mean if insurers leave, like United and Anthem and everything, then that means that you're going to have less competition. And less competition means that the insurers that remain on the marketplace can charge more because there's nobody that's going to kind of essentially stop them. Essentially, if more people leave and there's only like a scant amount of insurers on the Obamacare exchanges, and that means there's fewer people offering plans and fewer low price plans because there's no incentive for them to lower prices.
Yeah, there's no incentive whatsoever. So here we are, the American people that have, you know, all of these changes that occurred with Republicans not supporting it at all, getting ran through. That bill was put through like no other bill in American history. In a way that's never been done before, with Nancy Pelosi just adopting the Senate version and calling it good, with no committees to bring the bill and make them similar. Just made it the exact same bill. It's never been done. Parliamentary trick, and the trick seems to be on us going forward, because it doesn't seem to me we've accomplished much except complicating the system and costing people more money. We have not saved any money. The number of people, the aggregate gross number of people still uninsured is the same, may have shifted in some ways. But have we accomplished anything in your estimation?
Well, I think it's hard to tell. I mean, again, the administration really kind of tries to point to the estimated 20 million people that have gained coverage. They'll also point to kind of more popular provisions in the law, like the provision that insurers can't essentially exclude coverage from you for a pre-existing condition. But again, the administration is in kind of a tight spot with this problem with insurers because they have to find a way to kind of make the markets viable enough for insurers to do that. And they've been trying to kind of pull out all the stops to kind of appease insurers to ensure that they stick around in the markets. One thing that they've done is they've eliminated the number of kind of special enrollment periods, which is when you can sign up for Obamacare year-round instead of during the open enrollment period, which is kind of where somebody, where insurers are finding that somebody will use these open enrollment periods.
Hold that thought right there. Hold that thought right there, Robert. We'll be right back. I want to finish that thought on the Steve Gruber Show.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense. Take the last
train to Pottsville. And I wanted to give Robert King a chance here to finish his thoughts on what is working and what is not working for Obamacare. He is the healthcare correspondent for the Washington Examiner. We had a couple of extra minutes here. And Robert, I wanted to make sure we got it all in. So go ahead and finish your thoughts. What do you think is you know, the people that were afflicted with pre-existing conditions, people like that provision. People like the fact that young folks on the up to the age of 26 can be on the program. You know, there are things that people like, but overall, not so much. But go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah, well, essentially, I'll finish up by saying that the administration is really trying to pull out all the stops to try and keep insurers in Obamacare. They did this thing where they eliminated something called a special enrollment period where that allowed people to enroll in Obamacare year-round, essentially, instead of during the open enrollment period. And that's a lot of people use that. A lot of people use these special enrollment periods. And so they were costing insurers a lot of money. So the administration kind of recognizes that there's a problem here, and they're trying to do whatever they can to solve it, but I don't know. It remains to be seen whether or not it's going to be enough at this point. I mean, it really does remain to be seen since these insurers are, and in the next few weeks, we're actually going to know a lot more because insurers are going to be posting some of their latest financial data. So stay tuned, I guess.
I guess, yeah, we'll keep an eye on it, and it doesn't change. It just doesn't change as far as the arguments back and forth seem. The battle lines were drawn long ago, and they seem to hold their same spot. I greatly appreciate you taking the time to have the conversation, Robert.
Thank you very much.
There you have it. Robert King, healthcare correspondent for the Washington Examiner. The program today, if you'd like to join us, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. You can get on the Common Sense Hotline and join the conversation. Anything you want to talk about, I'll go ahead and it'll be like a preview for Free For All Friday. How about that? A preview for Free For All Friday. You can jump right on board and get involved with the conversation. I'm reading about this this physicist from Tuskegee University who has discovered a possible cure or treatment for cancer that I have not seen before that I find fascinating. And sitting here reading about it, I think we're going to have to get her on the program, using lasers to deal with cancer. And it's amazing to me. Here is a black woman who is a physicist at Tuskegee University. No invites to the White House, no conversations here with great news coverage, no media wall-to-wall coverage. It's baffling to me. And so we're going to see if we can and find this doctor and track her down and then have her here on the program. A chance to solve cancer and cure cancer with laser therapy, which I think would be, obviously it'd be a great accomplishment to say the least. It is 48 past the hour. Bernie Sanders now with his last chance to shake up the race in New York, and it looks like, well, you know, he might have a shot at this thing. In the midst of the Democratic primary's most contentious week to date, Sanders and Hillary Clinton will go toe-to-toe in Brooklyn. Tonight, in fact, Thursday night's Brooklyn debate is Bernie Sanders' last chance to shake up the race in a state where he must pull off a major upset to change the trajectory of the dynamics of the Democratic primary. And it's really not right, considering he's won 8 of the last 9 contests. But because the situation and the way this primary system is run by the Democrats, superdelegates have more control over the outcome than anything else. And it seems to me that a lot of people are concerned about the way both primaries are handled on the Republican and the Democratic side. The debate at the Brooklyn Navy Yard arrives during the most contentious week of the race so far. Sanders claiming Hillary Clinton is not qualified to be president, citing his common refrain that her 2002 vote in favor of the war in Iraq and the Wall Street donations, $15 million or more in all, that she has taken has disqualified her. He also attacked Bill Clinton's record on criminal justice. No comment yet on Hillary Clinton's involvement in that skit involving racial and racist humor, I suppose. Let's go to the hotline. Kevin checking in from Williamson. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How you doing, sir?
Doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Enjoying this beautiful sunny Michigan day today. Just driving right now. Got a couple of comments. You know, the caller talking about the Obamacare debacle thing. You and the caller.
Yes.
Anyway, long story short of it is, there's a couple things that I've been hearing here lately, and that is, of course, you know, you hear about these people that are getting these bills in the mail from the IRS because they didn't participate in the Obamacare, didn't have the insurance, and I've heard some people get hit for as much as $2,400. I don't know if you heard about that at all.
I hadn't.
Now they're getting hit for like $2,400, and then, of course, if they can't afford it and if they have any kind of a tax return, it gets deducted off their tax return. That's one thing. And then the other thing is that if they don't, of course, then they owe the IRS now that money.
What a nice system.
So beautiful.
If you can't afford it, they come take it from you anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know quite a few families, actually, that have been hit with that kind of a fee. But, you know, the other thing is, too, I don't know if they've taken into consideration these people that really, let's just say people that are mentally incapable of going online to subscribe to the Obamacare insurance. What about those people? They get hit with also a bill.
Well, there you go. It's just one problem after another with that program.
It really, really stinks. It's a real bad system. That's why they need to repeal Obamacare. I don't know when that's going to happen. Hopefully it'll happen this time around. We get a new president. We'll see what happens here.
Kevin, thanks for checking in.
Yes, sir. Take care now.
There you have it. Coming up tomorrow, of course, Free for All Friday, your chance to chime in on any topic of any interest for you, no matter what's going on, whether it's the debate between Sanders and Clinton, whether it's issues over Obamacare, consternation over who can use the restroom, men, women, both, everybody, dog pile, whatever's on your mind. It's a Free for All Friday coming tomorrow, of course. And that phone number, if you'd like to chime in one more time today, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. A couple of minutes left before we hit the finish line here on Thursday at the Steve Gruber Show. All right, it's Thursday. Tomorrow is Free for All Friday, but here's a warm-up for you. Here's where we normally do what's great about America. On this segment. But what's great about America? The freedom of speech is great about America. So we're going to go to the hotline. Millis is on the line in Perry. Millis, welcome back to the program.
How you doing, Steve?
Doing good. What's up, brother?
Good morning, man. I just wanted to just say how well written that letter was that you read earlier about the guy and, you know, addressing the boss on how do you really know who the predators are and who aren't. Who are the ones that are fitting for it? And, you know, I have a lot of concern. My nieces, my nephews, your kids.
Sure.
That's where I stand. You know, I'm not homophobic, but I have a lot of concern for that.
Yep.
And I think the rest of us should as well. Otherwise, if we walk around and just say, open arms, open doors, and things are bad enough already. Let's not make it any worse. And I'm not trying to just go the other way, but you better have a rock-solid solution for this.
Yeah, otherwise we'll just take the doors right off the bathrooms altogether. What difference does it make? Everybody can just co-mingle, and we can have a nudist beach all the way from here to wherever. I agree with you, Millis. I think there has to be some common sense applied, and it is about a lot of kids out there and so on and so forth. So I think it's a common sense conversation. Always welcome on the program, Millis. Don't be shy. Make sure you come back sometime soon. Brian is on the line in Lansing, first-time listener, I guess. Brian, welcome to the program. You got about a minute.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I was looking at the new Obama equal pay for women thing that he put in, and I was reading a synopsis in the Wall Street Journal about it. And there may be an exception in there for the WNBA, but it wasn't discussed in the article. And based on what was written, the WNBA is either going to have a whole bunch of really, really wealthy women now to equal the men's pay on the NBA side, or the WNBA is going to go out of business, or they're going to have to go back in and write an exemption for that law. Just the way it reads in the article that I read.
Well, yeah, everybody's got to, you know, equal pay for everything. You know, if you got a guy that's up on the top of the tower replacing the light at the radio station, he should get paid the same as the woman answering the phone, if you will, you know, or vice versa. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Brian, I got to run, my friend, because it's out of time for Thursday, but call back tomorrow for Free-for-All Friday right here on the Steve Gruber Show.